This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Now we have Te Piringa Kararehe, the animal shelter, with Annie and Kirsty on Plains FM.
Koutou, nau mai, haere mai, welcome to Te Piringa Kararehe, the animal shelter, here on Ōtautahi's community access radio station, Plains FM 96.9. This is a fortnightly show where we present bicultural perspectives on human-animal relationships here in Aotearoa and beyond. So we share some recipes for plant-based and vegan kai, some creative work which features non-human animal species, some critical animal perspectives, activism on behalf of other animal species, some news items, interviews, and also a carefully curated selection of waiata or songs. This is our 24th episode, I think. That's pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gone fast.
Wow.
So thanks everyone for listening to our show, and maybe we'll have to do something special for our quarter century next time.
Aye. Ngā mihi nui ki a koutou. Greetings everyone. Last week we featured the music of Moby. We had a kōrero in response to an article prophesying what a future Aotearoa might look like if we all
went
vegan.
Love that article.
And our featured species were the kahu and karearea. And Kirsty shared a purako, or story, about the karearea. And we also read some of the Native American writer Lewis Reed's poetry about the hawk and its significance to her people. And, of course, we had, I think we finished off with Kirsty's awesome your original recipe for not cheese rolls.
Yeah, it just occurred to me that I forgot to bring some in. Sorry.
Oh.
Next time.
I'm gutted about that.
So, I know, I'm sorry. I've made two more loaves of them in the weekend because I'm off to Australia shortly, so I had to stock up the freezer for our whare so that our whānau has plenty in supply when I'm gone. They're so good in this weather too, like with some soup.
They were just delicious. The best...
Not cheese rolls.
And cheese rolls I've ever tasted.
And I just wanted to say also to remember that if you'd like to give us any feedback, any ideas, suggestions, comments, maybe reviews about your own recipe experiments, we really love getting your feedback, so you can get in touch with us through our Facebook page. If you just search Te Piringa Kararehe, the animal shelter, on Facebook. Also, you can email me, Kirsty with a Y, H, Dunn at gmail.com. We're always really keen to hear from you and to hear what you have to say about our show.
And we've also got an event coming up next year, which is the Australasian Animal Studies Association Conference. So that's the conference for scholars, for activists, just for people who are interested in human-animal relations, but we particularly are taking a political perspective on that. In our conference theme, which is on decolonising animals. So it's still a while away yet. It's not till July next year. And it's going to be held at the Piano Music and Arts Centre from 1st to 4 July in 2019. But we thought you might like to follow the Facebook page that Kirsty's made just to keep up to date with notices and information about this conference. And also please share with anyone you know that might be interested, because we really want to get a good, really good crowd together for this conference and hopefully get some... some publicity too for the fact that it's taking part in Aotearoa and that we are looking also as part of in this conference, part of the kaupapa of it is Indigenous human-animal relations. So so check out our Facebook site that Kirsty's moderating, and we can put a link up to that event
definitely.
On our own Facebook page for Te Piringa Kararehe, so feel
awesome.
Free to like that, please.
It's it's so exciting. I'm so excited about it already. It's a year away yet, but I'm sure that time's going to go quite fast. But, we'll be putting up some information about our speakers that we're inviting, some different aspects of the kaupapa or the theme of the conference, as well as some relevant information about ōtautahi and sort of articles that relate to our conference theme as well.
And one of the things we want to do, Kirstie, is that have a kind of event where we have Indigenous vegan kai celebrated and perhaps some kind of cooking demonstration.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about that, trying to work out how we can get that into the conference.
Cool. So we thought we'd start off this episode with some waiata. And this week we're featuring the music of Flip Grater, who is an ōtautahi wahine who is a really talented singer-songwriter and also chef. She's released 4 critically acclaimed albums over the past 13 years. So in 2006, she had Cage for a Song. Be All and End All was released in 2008. 2010, she had While I'm Awake, I'm at War. And her most recent album from 2014 is called Pigalle, which she recorded while she was living in Paris. Flip's also published 2 books, The Cookbook Tour and The Cookbook Tour Europe, both of which feature vegan and vegetarian recipes collected and created during her travels, as well as some anecdotes about her journeys around Aotearoa and Europe. And we'll be talking a bit more about Flip's recent foray into vegan catering here in ōtautahi. But up first, here she is from her latest album, Pigalle. This is Safety of the Lights.
Just as the curtain falls, you
Haere mai koutou, welcome back to Te Peringa Kararehe here on Plains FM 96.9. That was Christchurch singer-songwriter and vegan chef Flip Grater with The Safety of the Lights.
Yeah, as I was saying before, the wire to break, Flip and her husband have recently launched a vegan catering business here in Ōtautahi. It's called Yumbo Bento. And they deliver fresh, healthy vegan kai in lunchboxes directly to schools, childcare centres and also workspaces here in Christchurch. And there's a few reasons why I think this is a pretty awesome initiative. The first is that all the kai is vegan, so dairy-free, all that jazz, and the ingredients are also seasonal, locally sourced and organic when possible, and meals are low allergen and can also be made gluten-free on request. So I think it's pretty awesome. Like, it's not often that you get sort of a business that's like totally vegan. Usually, you know, you sort of have some options to select. So it's pretty awesome that the whole kaupapa is plant-based from the start, I think.
So they don't, do they deliver to homes? It doesn't say homes.
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think it's just workplaces and schools at the moment. And so this is from their website. They talk about the optimal nutrition needed to help tamariki or children focus throughout the day. And so their menus include a variety of seasonal fruits and veggies, legumes, nuts and seeds when appropriate, I guess taking into consideration allergies there grains. And they use healthy fats such as coconut, olive oils and avocado, and regularly include probiotic-rich foods.
Oh, cool.
So every menu is planned with the child's daily nutritional needs in mind and optimised by raw foods and superfoods as well. And I guess that's to maybe like alleviate any concerns that people have. And we talked about that last week, this kind of idea that perhaps vegan kai doesn't fulfil the nutritional needs
of children in particular.
So it's pretty awesome, I think, that they've put out there that, you know, they take that into consideration and the kai is really great for hungry minds, I guess.
Yeah, and that's completely, like you say, complete opposite of what the Federated Farmers dude said last week.
Exactly, and yeah, they've also made a commitment to reducing food and landfill waste, which is pretty awesome as well. A lot of kōrero or dialogue going on about that at the moment in the news with reducing plastic and so on. So Flip and her team use completely compostable lunch boxes, and they also make everything from scratch so that there's no excess packaging. They compost their food scraps, and the menus are focused on maximum sustainability by using locally sourced plant-based foods, which I think is really awesome.
That's pretty special, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like they've sort of thought of everything, I think. And also, so in terms of availability, the school lunches are available from Wednesday to Friday, and they're delivered free around the city. Adult lunchboxes are available every Monday to offices and schools in the Christchurch CBD, which is pretty cool because that coincides with the Meat Free Monday movement.
It makes
it a bit easier to be part of that if you want to. They also have an option of buying a lunch for someone else or donating a lunchbox to someone in need, so that's pretty cool too.
That's really cool.
So for more information, you can check out their website. It's just www.yumbo, that's YUMBO.NZ. And they also have a Facebook page, so if you just search for Yumbo Bento on Facebook, you'll be able to find them. And I have to say, I haven't actually checked out the lunches myself yet. I haven't found out if they do deliveries to the university or not, but I'm definitely keen to. And I am a follower on Instagram, mainly for the ideas for Kai. And I can definitely say that the adult and child lunch boxes look awesome. They're colourful, they're healthy, it's interesting, Kai. There's lots of different flavours and combinations, including fresh fruits and veggies, wraps and salads, sushi, savoury muffins, slices and chia seed puddings. Yeah, it all looks really delicious, so definitely check that out. And up next, Annie's going to be sharing a piece from Carol Adams, her recent publication, Burger. And Carol Adams, I guess, is most famous for her texts about the relationship between, I guess, the language of meat consumption and how that relates to how we speak about women as well. So her famous texts are The Sexual Politics of Meat and The Pornography of Meat. And Annie's going to be sharing with us, yeah, a piece from her recent publication called Burger.
Yeah, so Burger is a really tiny book.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's part of a series called Object Lessons, which is published by Bloomsbury. And it's they described Object Lessons series as a series about the hidden lives of ordinary things, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So they've done some really, I've just got to read out this because this is so strange, but these are the ones that they've published these little books on already. One is on veil, like V-E-I-L. Another one's on sock.
Oh.
One's on password. There's one on souvenir. There's one on luggage. There's one on tumour. And there's one on whale song. So they're quite unusual.
Oh, that is really
unusual.
Yeah,
it's kind of, and they're just like, you'd read this in, oh, I would say about 20 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. No, not 10. That's a bit rude.
Yeah, that's a bit
not quite
ambitious.
10 minutes. Yeah. But,
that's really cool.
So
it's really interesting.
What's a real coup, though, is that Carol was asked to write Burger, considering that hamburgers are always, you know, we always associate them with meat.
Yeah.
We have historically for a long time, but now, of course, we're moving into the age of the vegan burger.
Yep.
So her book kind of moves from, it's kind of a cultural history of the burger, very much focused on American cultural history and popular culture. But it moves from like just that kind of idea of, you know, like the series says, a hidden life of the ordinary object. So the burger being just about meat, and she moves through to meat-free burgers at the end, which is really cool. But I think it's great they asked her to do this since she, you know, we all know, if we know her, that she is very powerfully against meat.
It's going to be a critical aspect.
Yeah. So the whole thing is written in a critical way.
Rather than a kind of celebration of the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, she talks about the destruction of buffalo for the establishment of, like, meat, beef meat as a staple for the colonists in America. Mm. And she talks about how slaughter of bovines for beef becomes so kind of mechanised and distanced from the animal. You know, this is part of her whole thing, is the idea of the absent referent.
Yeah.
When you eat meat, the animal's absent, so you don't actually have to think of the animal.
Yeah.
It's been cut up and dismembered in ways that you don't
associate
with the animal that the meat came from. So I just thought I'd read quickly part of one of the chapters from Adam's Burger. This is chapter 5, and it's on Creutzfeldt Jakob Burger and other modernist hamburger identity crises. And actually, I should say that the sort of blurb for this book says, long the all-American meal, the burger, is undergoing an identity crisis, from its shifting place in popular culture to efforts by investors such as Bill Gates to create the non-animal burger that can feed the world. The burger's identity has become as malleable as that patty of protein itself before it's thrown on a grill. So this is chapter 5, Creutzfeldt Jakob Burger and Other Modernist Hamburger Identity Crises. In 1996, a man walked into a London McDonald's and asked for a Creutzfeldt Jakob burger. This followed a March 20 announcement that a disease in cows, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE, commonly known as mad cow disease, was possibly linked to a fatal human equivalent, Creutzfeldt Jakob disease, or CJD. The disclosure that BSE might have jumped species from cows to human beings through the eating of infected animal flesh caused shockwaves in the economy and emotions of many people in Western countries, and specifically in Great Britain. The announcement was a startling about-face after years in which the British government assured the public that British cow flesh was safe to consume. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease generally strikes elderly people. The cases of CJD that stimulated the 1996 controversy were very different from the textbook cases. Not only did CJD attack young people, but also upon being autopsied, their brain tissue looked different, more like that of Alzheimer's sufferers than the classic Swiss cheese appearance associated with traditional cases of CJD. Since the incubation period for CJD is anywhere from 10 to 40 years, many formerly happy beef eaters were now worried that there was a time bomb ticking in their systems that they were powerless to stop. We might say that 1996 was a cultural moment when the normally absent reference status of the cow within the hamburger became known and was discussed. In the sexual politics of meat, this is Carol Adams talking, politicised the literary concept of the absent referent and applied it to animals used for food. Living animals are the absent reference in hamburger consumption in three ways. They are literally absent because they are dead. They are absent reference because when we eat animals, we change the way we talk about them, not as dead animals, but as hamburger. The third way animals disappear is metaphorical. They become metaphors for describing people's experiences. In this metaphorical sense, the meaning of the absent referent derives from its application or reference to something else. The mad cow crisis made animals and their living and dying present and caused some sales to plummet. To understand how humans might get CJD from eating cows, people learned about how cows had got BSE. Information on what herbivorous cows had been fed, the brains of other cows, and the sight of entire herds of cows being burned to stop the spread shocked consumers. The mad cow crisis was thought to be a body blow to the industry. McDonald's quickly added a veggie burger to their offerings in England. After the publication of The Jungle in 1906, which is a really famous novel about the slaughter industry as it started off in its really industrialised form, people for a short time became, as humorous Finley Peter Dunn's Mr. Dooley described it, vegetarians. But in 1906, vegetarians returned to eating animal flesh again, and after 1996, the burger recovered from the scare. How does cultural memory work with hamburgers? Mm. The mad cow crisis is but one of the many identity crises the hamburger has undergone in its short, century-long career as a cheap, protein-based single food portion. Does a crisis provide opportunities to regain trust in the state through its reassurance that it will regulate animal flesh production, thus restoring both the product and the populace to safety? If there are Teflon presidents, first said of Ronald Reagan because nothing stuck to him, and we've had a prime minister like that, let's consider the Teflon product, rebounding from identity crisis after identity crisis to land back in the frying pan.
Mm. That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're probably a bit too young for remembering that, but I remember it because
I remember the news. Piles of animals and how
being burned,
how shocking
stuff.
That
it's
was.
Awful.
And then it wasn't until I did my master's and I did a bit more about that history. I learned a bit more about that history and was kind of thinking about how that sight for people was so horrible and alarming, and yet it was interesting that there is no alarm about the slaughter of animals in immense numbers that happens every day. It's just because we could see it,
exactly.
It was out there.
Exactly, and I kind of think of what's happening now with this bovine disease in New Zealand and how people are getting really upset because farmers are having to cull off all their herds or being told they have to. And the farmers are upset about it, but actually they do that anyway. And also I was thinking of the bird flu epidemic when I read that. It's like the way to solve any of these problems, humans think, is just to exterminate, just in these horrific ways, these mass killings. And for a while it's conscious in the human mind and then disappears.
And interesting too that that idea of that act of mass extermination kind of serving to uphold the status quo. Like, oh, someone's looking after it. Someone's taking care of it. Mm. It's being regulated. We can go back to normal now.
Yeah, kind of what Adams is saying.
Yeah, and that's so interesting.
Yeah, it's a real putting people at rest, their minds at rest, and reassurance that they've got it all under control through annihilation.
Yeah,
it's really interesting.
Far out. I'd really like to read that. It looks like an awesome book.
Well, as I said, it's a really, it's a brilliant, beautiful read, but it's not a long book. It's just really a compact cultural history of the burger, and it's pretty awesome, and I quite like the series itself.
Yeah, that sounds object really lessons. Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. We might have another Waiata now from our featured artist this week, who is Flip Grater. This is the title track from her album While I'm Awake, I'm at War, which was released in 2008.
After the scene, I was walking away, tired and divorced of my wounds. While I was singing, you silenced me, told me to tell. What were you thinking the other day when I lay alone in my womb? And what did you think when I called out your name? Did you think I had called? Thank you.
Kia ora everyone, welcome back. You're on Ōtautahi's Community Access Radio Station, Plains FM 96.9, and you're with Annie and Kirst in our show, Te Piringa Kararehe, The Animal Shelter. You've just been listening to Flip Grader's track, While I'm Awake, I'm at War. And before the break, we mentioned that Flip has an awesome vegan catering business called Yumbo Bento, which delivers lunchboxes to schools and workplaces here in Christchurch, so do check that out. And speaking of kai, Annie's got a recipe for us for some delicious soup.
Oh, this is just what I want today.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really awesome, hearty, warm winter soup. Now, it's called Pasta Fazool, but it's actually, that's how they've said on this website to pronounce it. Do you know this one?
No, but I never would have thought that that's how you say it.
No, I wouldn't either. But, so I'll tell you how you spell it, because I would have thought that was Fagioli.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's Fagioli, Pasta Fagioli, but they've said above to pronounce it like Fazool, but I'm not going to do that. So it's really quick prep time of 10 minutes, the cook time of 15 minutes. It's a total time of around about 25 minutes.
Sweet.
And it's an Italian vegan soup which will serve four. Now, what's really cool too is that the calories per serving is only 537 kilocalories.
So you can have three slices of bread.
Yeah, or have the whole four servings yourself.
Yeah. Sweet.
So the ingredients are 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1/2 cup of yellow onion chopped, 1 clove of fresh garlic minced, 1/4 cup of fresh parsley chopped, 2 cans of cannellini beans, drained and rinsed, 1 cup of marinara sauce or chopped tomatoes, 32 ounces, I have no idea how much that is in metrics, of vegetable broth. But you can convert that.
Google that
and tell that this is a US system here. 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper and 1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes, which is optional. That would kill me, but if you like that kind of thing. And then 2 cups of ditalini pasta or other small pasta. And ditalini, do you know what that is, Kirsty?
No, I
didn't know either. It just looks like those kind of like tubular pasta.
Okay, yeah.
What do we call that? I can't remember.
Like macaroni.
Yeah, like macaroni, but the penne, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So you're going to bring a large pot of water to boil and cook the pasta according to the package instructions, of course, and drain and set aside. Then heat the olive oil in a large soup pot over medium heat and add the onion, garlic, parsley, black pepper, and the red pepper flakes if you're using them. And then saute until soft and fragrant. Then add the vegetable broth, tomato sauce, and the cannellini beans, and simmer for about 15 minutes so the flavours all come together. And then you serve warm over a small scoop of the pasta.
Yum.
Yeah.
That sounds super good in winter.
It just looks so nice too.
Comfort food.
It's real comfort food. Like it reminds me a bit of minestrone, maybe a sort of vegan version of minestrone. So this has got 48% protein in it, which is also pretty cool. And lots of vitamin C, A, calcium, and iron in it.
Yum. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, what does it say here? A special recipe note, though. You can combine the soup with the pasta and make this a one-pot soup, but the chef found that she liked it better when they're kept separate so the pasta doesn't get too soggy.
It's so funny because this is really nothing to do with anything, but yeah. When I was fleeting in Dunedin, we had one flatmate, one of my best friends, who we used to give so much flack to because she struggled with cooking. And this one time she tried to make minestrone, and it just turned into this slop, at which we dubbed Glugastroni. And ever since then, we always bring that up when we see her Glugastroni.
Awesome.
So maybe keep those separate instead of combining. So up next, we're going to combine our kupuho, or new word and species focus for this week, after I found a couple of cool clips online. So this week I've chosen the kuaka, or the godwit, as our featured manu, or bird. So that kupuho, that new word is kuaka, which is spelled K-U-A-K-A. No tohu to, so no macrons on any of those, which is the Māori kupu or word for godwit. And here's some information about this incredible bird that makes the longest non-stop flight of any non-seabird. And this is all sourced from New Zealand Birds Online, and I can put a link up to that on our Facebook page. So the brown and grey plumage of the kuaka echoes the intertidal mudflats where they forage. And their time of departure from Aotearoa is determined by their destination. So birds leaving in early March breed in more southern areas of western Alaska, while birds leaving in late March breed north of the Brooks Range. And snow cover, which clears in southern areas from early May, but not till the beginning of June in the north, explains the reason for these staggered departures. Bar-tailed godwits are fully protected in New Zealand, and the current count data indicates that an annual population decline of nearly 2%. As with other migratory species, using the East Asian Australasian flyway, kuaka face a real and potent threat from habitat loss. They tend to be wary and easily spooked, and so preventing or minimising disturbance at high tide roost sites is an important aspect of conservation. I'm going to play you some sound recordings of the kuaka now. These were recorded by Les McPherson, and they're part of the Natural History Unit Sound Archive, and again I can put a link up to that on our Facebook page. And these birds were recorded at Ihutai, otherwise known as the Avon Heathcote Sanctuary, in 1973. So I'm just going to find this recording now. So there's a couple of other recordings there you can access. And to finish off our kupuho and species focus on the kuaka, I thought I'd play this really cool kōrero recorded by Awa Media. And this is a wahine from Ngāti Kuri, who recounts some pūrākau or stories she was told as a child about the origins and adventures of the kuaka, or the godwit, and the mātauranga, or knowledge, that's encapsulated in these stories about them. So we'll have a listen to that now.
When Tane was creating all the birds of the forest, kuaka was one of his favourites. And kuaka strayed more towards his brother's side of his uncle, of Tangaroa. And kuaka was the bird that liked to talk the most and chitter-chatter and loved telling stories and loved new information. And he would flitter off and find these little stories and he'd come back and he was like the storyteller of all the birds. And then one day kuaka got really potey. He was starting to get quite potey. And Tane asked him, you know, what's wrong, kuaka? Kaha tō raru. And kuaka had said, I'd run out of stories to tell. I've no longer got any more kōrero. Everybody's heard my kōrero. And I want to see these new things. And so Tane looked upon him and saw his child and said, oh, well, this is what I will do for you. And he asked him to close his eyes. So when he closed his eyes, he slipped into him a stone that sits in his throat. And when he woke, kuaka placed half of his heart in the kokata sands of the Parengarenga Harbour, because that's where kokata lives. It's one of kokata's homes, kuaka's homes, is our kokata. And I suppose he had said to kuaka that he could go and travel, and he was to travel past Hawaikinui and Hawaiki roa and into the distance of Hawaiki Pāmaumau. But when he was to get tired, he was to call upon his brother, his uncle, who would rise up and support him. He was also told not to eat anything or take anything from anybody he didn't know. So off Kuaka went with half a heart and a stone in his throat, and with his, you know, with Tane saying, you know, return to me. You'll know when to return to me, but return to me in the season when the summer comes, when the sun comes back. So off he went, and he saw, like, and these are stories that my nanny used to tell us on the, you know, on the middle of the hill out in Kiakaha Hill, as we could overlook the Kuaka, and they're little children's stories, you know, like. And so Kuaka went past Hawaiki Nui, and he saw the crocodiles and the snakes, and there were whānau there that caught it all, only Māori, and that's why we have relationships over there, because there were still tribes that were there on the journey. And so he picked up a few stories there, and then he went to Hawaiki Pāmaumau, and he started to get really tired journeying towards, you know, the Hawaikis of Hawaiki. And so he called out to his uncle, and his uncle Tangaroa raised up a sand spit, and that sand spit is now known as Osaka, which is in Japan, and it's a place where Kuaka lands, like the Kokota, like Osaka. Yeah. And she talked of how he ate, you know, he ate there, because Kuaka only eats out of the sea. He's pure. And so he travelled into the far distance where he came to these wetlands, and he saw these birds that looked quite similar to him. And he landed, and he fell in love. And when he fell in love, he married into this whole new whānau of birds that just looked just like him. And he had children, and he had mokopuna coming, and he had fathers and was, he had all this whānau, and the stone started to pull in his throat, and the season started to change, and he knew he had to go home. And his wife wouldn't come with him, because she said that who would stay and look after the old people, and that he needed to journey back himself. So he rallied up all his children and his mokopuna, and he took flight. So when Kuaka takes flight, he flies up once and he circles, and then the other two come in and they circle, and on the next wave they all leave. But this time, he, you know, before he left there, he put the other part of his heart in the sand. So he has no heart, because it belongs in two different lands, one on this side of the world and on the other side of the world. He comes home to us. So when he came home, it was in Raumati, in the peak of the summer. You know, well, not summer, it's like, Kuaka signifies to us a season, and it's a different type of season. So this season brings the sun. It also brings happiness, it brings whānau time, it brings celebrations. Like, Kuaka signifies that to us as Ngāti Kuri when we know he comes home and he lands. But yeah, so basically Kuaka, who has no heart, but Kuaka, who can travel the world and has all this knowledge, and he brings it here and he takes it over there, and he traverses the whole of the world, and he shares his knowledge.
On your own.
cold turkey. It's the only way out for a junkie like me to finally be free. Even if it takes a long time for my hands to stop shaking, even if it's harder than I thought it would be, it's what I
Koto, welcome back. That was Flip Grader with The Quit. That was the first single released from her most recent album, Pigal. And next, Annie's going to be telling us about the awesome new menu at Raw Sugar.
So Raw Sugar's just around the corner from where we're actually recording here at Plains FM. It's at 73 Manchester Street. Its opening hours are Tuesday to Friday, 7 to 4, and Saturday to Sunday, 8 to 4. So they've just changed their menu to the winter one. I just thought I'd let you know a couple of the really awesome things that are on this new menu. So one of them is, that really appeals to me, is called Sweet Giant Toast, which is homemade, which is toast served with homemade spiced almond butter and caramelised banana, topped with chia seeds, freeze-dried berries and maple syrup. So that sounds pretty yum.
It sounds so good.
Really good. Really good. And, so they got no meat at all. They do have some eggs. They have one dish that's Eggs Benedict, which has eggs in it. But they use vegan ham, and if any of the dishes say that they've got meat in them, their vegan versions thereof. They also have a new thing on the menu called Mushroom Mania, which is vegan, which is spaghetti with creamy sauce with exotic mushrooms, citrus herbs, topped with crispy mushrooms and vegan parmesan.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
And here's the one that's really, like, this is my favourite.
I'm just getting hungry.
Yeah, this is called the Humble Trio. So the Humble Trio is new on the menu. Shiitake protein and black lentil crispy balls on a creamy winter mash topped with slow-cooked tomato sauce, vegan parmesan, winter greens and crispy polenta cakes. Yay.
Far out. Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah, so they've got an awesome chef in there, or chefs, I think I've met her once when she came out because they were really busy and served me my, you know, food, and I told her how wonderful it was. But they're just really cool people in there. It's a really nice atmosphere.
It is, yeah. They're so friendly and lovely.
Yeah, and it's nice and sunny on winter days.
Awesome. I'm keen to check that out.
Mm.
Well, thanks for joining us today. That's about all we have time for. Make sure you tune in next time. We'll be back with some more kōrero about human-animal relationships here in Aotearoa and beyond, some kupuhō or new words, recipes and ideas for plant-based kai as well. We really hope you enjoyed our show today. Take care and hei kōnera. And here is Flip Grater with Careful.
Mm-hmm. some.